House Committee on Judiciary has come to order, and it's June 10th, 2005, Friday. As you can see, I am not Representative Krieger. Okay.
Good.
You're much older.
Much older, thank you. Okay, we have, actually from the last count that I had, 18 bills that we need to go through today, and I'm getting kind of hungry, so if we can set a record here this morning and see what we can do with that.
Want a donut?
Want a tangerine salad?
No. No, we better get going here. Okay. I'd like to hold a work session on House Resolution, or House Concurrent Resolution 17. Did you want to share?
The committee, I believe Sam Sears has done the staff with the summary. I know Guy Wilhelm, and the clerk of the House is also here at the moment to talk about the issue.
Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 17 honors Richard Iman for legislative leadership and lifelong public service.
Oh, okay. Mr. Wilhelm, do you want to come up and Representative Barr? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Representative Terry Beyer from Springfield, and it was my pleasure to introduce this House Concurrent Resolution on behalf of Richard Iman. He doesn't live in my district. He lives near my district, has made a big impact on my district, and was surprised to find out he had never been honored. And so it was a pleasure for me to use a priority bill and introduce it. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to the people that knew him even better than I. So thank you.
Well, to excuse me.
That's all right.
I'll defer to the representative.
Okay. Well, and I won't take much of your time, too, because I can hear your stomach growling from here. For the record, I'm Deborah Boone, House District 32. And I'm really supportive of this. I was so surprised to hear from Ramona that this hadn't happened before, and so I encourage you to run this one as fast as you can so we can get things going and honor this wonderful man. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm Gary Wilhelm, Chief of Staff for the Speaker. To make sure that you understand, this is a bipartisan effort. I was a freshman representative in the House when Mr. Iman was the Speaker. He was it was kind of an interesting situation in 1973. The D's had just taken control from the R's after 10 years of our control. So Speaker Iman was in this position of authority, and I was, like a lot of freshmen are when they get to the building, fairly wide-eyed and taking it all in. And this was a session that predated sunshine laws, that predated open meetings laws, and that predated a lot of the rules that now exist in the body that really do defend the minority. So although Richard Iman had the ability to be a dictator, and sometimes he was always a benevolent dictator, and I had nothing but the utmost respect for him, and I think that it would be very appropriate for you to act swiftly on this measure, because I understand from Ramona, his daughter, that he is failing, and it would be wonderful to pass this while the gentleman is still alive and well enough to appreciate it. So I absolutely concur with the idea that you should pass this measure. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wilhelm. Any questions? Anyone else in the audience like to share? Ms. Kennedy.
My name is Ramona Kennedy, and I'm Chief Clerk for the House. And outside of that role, I'm the daughter of Richard Iman. When I was approached, because there had never been a resolution, I was very, very sort of without words. And I know that's a surprise to most of you, they would want to honor my father at this time. I know both my father and my mother are going to appreciate this greatly. And I think that the tradition that has started the session to actually honor people while they're still alive is a nice tradition, as opposed to waiting until they have passed. And in putting together this resolution, I myself found out a lot of things that my father had done that I didn't even know about, and there's a lot of things that didn't make the list. He clearly was my example of what a public servant should be. He is the main reason why I've been in this institution. He raised me in this institution, and I always claim the house as my home. And so it is with, again, a lot of being very humbled by the fact that this 73rd Legislative Assembly will recognize my father for all of his great service, and not to mention that behind my father was my mother. And if you look at the closing part of this resolution, while my father was here doing business, my mother was raising eight of us, sometimes alone. And then when we ran out of children to raise, and us children not having children, grandchildren quick enough for her, she raised 19 foster children. And so she herself has been a great public servant. So I appreciate you taking this under consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Anyone else like to share? Okay, since we're still in a work session at this point, Representative Ackerman, I know that you were good friends of Mr. Iman. I'd be curious as to whether or not you'd be honored to move this.
It really would be, Mr. Chair, and with that in mind, I will move that HRC 17 be forwarded to the House with a due pass recommendation. And just let me say briefly in support of that measure that I knew Dick Iman from Wayne County Politics beginning in the very late 60s and through the 70s. I also knew him as a legislator and as a Speaker of the House. And for a period of time, he was an executive at Lane Community College, and I was also on the board at that time. As a result of that friendship, he sort of became a mentor in a way, an unspoken way. But he was a wonderful person, great imagination, great talent, great wit, great leader. And I think we have a lot of interesting things to say about him on Monday. I have had two or three very, very unique stories about Dick Iman that I've only told two or three people that I want really the opportunity to take that on Tuesday when we have discussion regarding the resolution. I think it would be informative and fun and commemorative, and really this is makes me feel very, very good that we can do this even at this late date for Richard. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ackerman moves that HCR 17 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Seeing none. Clerk, would you call the roll?
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger, excuse.
With that being HCR 17 passes, and Representative Ackerman, would you be honored to carry that?
I am honored. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We have a work session now on House Bill 2561.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2561A removes the authority from the Department of Human Services for the administration of the interstate juvenile compact and vests that responsibility with the Oregon Youth Authority. The Dash 1 amendments were adopted in subcommittee, and the Dash 1 amendments are the bill.
Is there any discussion or objection to the bill? Seeing none.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2561A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
McPherson moves that House Bill 2561 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
They're adopted. Thank you.
Okay. That's understood. Then the Dash 1 amendments have been adopted. Okay. Okay. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Olson?
Aye. House Bill 2561 passes with a due pass rec. Yes.
Should close the work session.
Oh, excuse me. Close the work session. Okay. House Bill 2561 passes with a due pass recommendation. And Representative McPherson, you're carrying?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to work session on Senate Bill 57.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 57, courtesy from the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, allows the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training to establish fees and guidelines for the use of its facility, including its training academy. No amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 57 to fourth to be passed.
Barker moves that Senate Bill 57 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger, excuse. Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 57 passes with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Barker?
Yeah, you carried it earlier.
Okay. Great. Okay, open a work session on Senate Bill 61A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 61A comes from the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, and it basically does some refinements to the private security laws of Oregon. It comes to you, as I said, from BPSST, and the carrier is Representative McPherson. No amendments.
Is there any discussion or objection to the bill?
Mr. Chair, then I move Senate Bill 61A to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson moves Senate Bill 61A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger, excuse. Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 61A passes with a due pass recommendation. And Representative McPherson, you're carrying?
Yes.
Okay. Open a work session on Senate Bill 62.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 62 comes to you from the Department of BPSST again. And, Mr. Chairman of the committee, the carrier is Representative Barker. There are -6 amendments to the bill, and the bill allows the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training to provide grants and private entities to, among other things, conduct studies and research relating to public safety. The -6 amendments, which are substantially similar to the -5 that were adopted in committee, do a couple of things. First off, they are a conflict amendment with another bill that we just passed, or will soon pass, Senate Bill 63. Also, substantively, it allows the department may suspend or revoke a fire service professional's license upon a conviction of a crime. It also sets a process and procedure for the use of for fingerprints and obtaining them and using them as it relates to both firefighters and law enforcement officials. The changes that were made between the -5 and -6 are really, they're more style and technical. I can take you to page 8, and John Minnis is also here. He could probably help explain them too. But for example, on page 8, if we inserted on line 17, saying whether a subject individual, and it was added, described in subsection 1A and or B of this section, and we made some other changes of that nature too.
Okay, thank you. Director Minnis, would you share the...
Mr. Chairman, members of the House Judiciary Committee, yes, Mr. Taylor indicated after we left yesterday the Subcommittee on Criminal Law, I went back to my office. I got a frantic call from the Attorney General's office Hello Brody, who's a counsel to the agency, and specifically relating to the provision dealing with access to NCIC and fingerprints. Apparently public law and federal law requires that statute specifically indicate that the agency have the power to require fingerprints, and the verbiage was not in the amendment in the dash 5. So there was a hurried attempt to fix that so that it was consistent with the language that is in House Bill 2157, which I believe Mr. Representative McPherson has been working on in his subcommittee in civil law, and apparently council had dropped off that verbiage, so that had to be repaired. There were some other subsequent, one other subsequent amendment that is a little bit more complex in that in fire service, if you'll notice in the amendment, which is consistent in Measure 5, there was an acknowledgement of ORS 67280, which is a provision that exists in law requiring that certain revocations of certifications be related specific to certain aspects of the duties of the job and so on and so forth. The way the bill was constructed in the dash 5, when you got into the fingerprint discussion, the verbiage from ORS 67280 had been rolled back into the language again and conflicted with ORS 181662 sub 4, which is a different authority that the agency has with respect to granting. That particular statute says that the board shall determine which criminal convictions require decertification. So those two statutes seem to conflict. So what the recommendation was to do was to keep that verbiage so we had the integrity of the language there. It would apply then to new hires and contractors and people coming into the profession, but would remain consistent with the current certification practice that the agency has so that as far as certifications or revocations are concerned, 67280 would not apply, which is consistent with the existing practice and position of the Attorney General's office.
Any questions?
Mr. Representative McPherson is clearly the expert on this, I assume, since he's had a lot of discussion in his committee. I'm assuming, because
actually, that's what I've been told. So. Representative Ackerman is the...
I sincerely apologize.
That's okay. Was there a question or just a concern? I was thinking it was Mr. Representative McPherson's question. I sort of was someplace else. That's what happens when you're trying to redraft Measure 37 with Chair Gerard. I'm crazy right now.
I don't know if there are any questions, but I guess President
Mark explained it. I'll move the dash 6 amendments into Senate Bill 62.
Representative Barger moves that the dash 6 amendments into Senate Bill 62. Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barger?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Work?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger, excuse. Chair Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 62 as amended to the floor with the due pass. And I'd like to compliment Director Minnis on all the work he did yesterday getting this thing ready for us today.
Representative Barker has moved that Senate Bill 62 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger, excuse. Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 62, as amended, passes. So you're going to carry that then, Representative Barker.
Okay. Thank you.
Senate Bill 63A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 63A comes to you from the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training and allows the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training to deny an applicant application for training as well as deny or revoke the certification of any public safety instructor or public safety officer. Requires the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training through the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training to adopt rules specifying the circumstances under which a public safety officer instructor may reapply. Chair, members of the committee, there are no amendments. Representative Thatcher is the carrier of the bill.
That was 63A? Okay. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 63A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thatcher moves that Senate Bill 63A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Seeing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrar?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Work?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 63A passes with the due pass recommendation. And I'll carry that, close the work session on that.
You're going to carry that?
Yes.
Okay.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 248.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 248 comes to you from the Joint Interim Judiciary Committee. It creates the Criminal Justice Research and Policy Institute within the Mark Hatfield School of Government, Fortin State University, for the purposes of assisting state and local governments in developing policies and reduce crime and delinquency through research and analysis, promoting professionalism in public safety careers, and strengthening the ties among the Oregon Legislative Assembly, state and local government, the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, the academic community, and the Department of Standards and Training. Creates the Oregon Criminal Scientific Advisory Committee. In committee, we adopted the subcommittee adopted the -A3 amendments, and Representative Barker is the carrier.
Okay. Is there any discussion or objection to the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 240 with the A3 amendments to the floor with the due pass.
Representative Barker moves that Senate Bill 240 with the -3 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Clerk call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrar?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Work?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 248, as amended, passes with the due pass recommendation. And Representative Barker, you're going to carry.
Thank
closes
you.
Work session on that. Opens work session on Senate Bill 258.
Mr. Chair, okay. Do you want to go back to 287 afterwards? Or did we skip over? Oh, I'm sorry.
We're 258.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 258 it provides that no person in criminal action involving only violations is entitled is not entitled to appointed counsel. There are no amendments. Representative Olson is a carrier. I'm sorry.
Is that what you were struggling with? Was seeing the carrier part? Okay, got it. Is there any discussion or objection to the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 258 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Barker moves Senate Bill 258 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrar?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger excused. Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 258 passes with a due pass recommendation, and I'll be the carrier of that. And that closes work session on 258. Open a work session on Senate Bill 287A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 287A comes to you from the Joint Interim Judiciary Committee, and Representative Walker permits a victim statement made out of court to be used in court if a party to the proceedings, usually a defendant in a criminal trial, engaged in wrongdoing that caused the person making the statement to be unavailable. No amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Representative McPherson is the carrier.
Okay. Is there any discussion or objection to the bill?
Then, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 287A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson moves Senate Bill 287A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Seeing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrer?
Aye.
Representative Thacker?
Aye.
Representative Work?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Pershing?
Aye.
Chair Krieger excused. Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 287A passes with a due pass recommendation. And Representative McPherson, you're going to carry?
Okay.
Closes that Senate bill. Open a work session on Senate Bill 568A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 568A comes here from Senator Brzezinski at the request of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. It allows a court to suspend a person's driving privileges for up to 30 days if a person exceeds the speed limit by more than 30 miles per hour and has one or more speeding violations within 12 months of the current offense. Chair, members of the committee, there are no amendments, and Representative Olson is the chair.
Is there any discussion or objection to the bill?
No. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 568A to the floor to do pass.
Representative Ward.
I just wanted to state for the record that Mr. Chair, I'll be opposing this bill and self-incriminate. So.
Here's a confession.
Representative Barker heard your motion. Is there further discussion?
I haven't listened.
Okay. Hearing none, Representative Barker moves that Senate Bill 568A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Hearing none, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrer?
Aye.
Representative Thacker?
Aye.
Representative Work?
No.
Vice Chairman Pershing?
Aye.
Chair Krieger excused. Chair Olson?
Aye. With that, Senate Bill 568A passes with the due pass recommendation, and I'll carry that, and that closes Senate Bill 568A. Open a work session on Senate Bill 128.
Chair Olson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 128 comes to you from the Oregon State Police. This measure would allow the grand jury that is investigating a charge of failure to report as a sex offender to receive evidence in the form of a certified copy of the defendant's sex offender registration records from the Oregon State Police, accompanied by an affidavit by the custodian of those records from the State Police. This is a change from current law because under current law, there is no exception the lack of personal appearance by the custodian of record. There is a -1 amendment that was conceptually proposed and adopted by the Criminal Law Subcommittee yesterday that corrects a very technical error in the measure. It is a renumbering of paragraphs, essentially, correction that did not make it into the original draft.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion or objection to the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move that the amendments to the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 128.
Representative Barker moves that the -1 amendments be moved to Senate Bill 128. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrer?
Aye.
Representative Thacker?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Pershing?
Aye.
Chair Krieger excused. Chair Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say the -1s have been moved into your Senate bill.
Okay, then I move Senate Bill 128 as amended to the floor for due pass.
Okay. Representative Barker moves that Senate Bill 128 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
I just have a little question. On this amendment, I thought we were going to be adding 10 and not replacing it 8 with 10.
Chair Olson, Representative Thacker, the change happened, I'm looking at the original version of Senate Bill 128 on page 1, line 5. The way that the first paragraph starts out, it describes here are the following paragraphs are the exception to the general rule that the evidence received at grand jury must be
evidence that is otherwise admissible in trial. And it lists the original version, or the current version of the statute lists sections 2 through 7. So those under current law are the exception. This bill added a new paragraph that was listed as paragraph 8, and there was a pre-existing paragraph that was under current law is paragraph 9, and under the renumbered bill it's paragraph 10 that has to do with reports regarding DUII charges. So the new paragraph 10 is it's really only a new number. It is an existing exception to the grand jury rule. So what the change that was made by this amendment is, it's clarifying that paragraphs 2 through 10 of this amended bill are all exceptions to that general grand jury rule.
Good, thank you.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, just for clarification, it's simply the numbers that are being replaced and inserted, not verbiage.
Chair Olson, Representative Flores, that is absolutely correct. The only addition is the substance of the bill itself that is has to do with sex offender registration records. There is no other substantive change to the statute through this bill or amendment.
Thank you. So you've already made the motion. Okay. Any further discussion then? All right. Representative Barker moves that Senate Bill 128 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thacker?
Aye.
Representative Wirth?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Person?
Aye.
Chair Krieger excused. Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 128 as amended passes with a due pass recommendation. And Chair McPherson? Or, I mean, not Chair McPherson, Representative McPherson, you're the carrier.
Okay.
Just might point out to the committee that so far, other than Representative Ackerman, it's been the criminal subcommittee carrying all the bills so far today. just thought I'd point that out.
So. Yeah, that could be the heavy lifting of this committee, Mr. Chair.
You might look at last week when it was a little bit
different. I understand. Okay. Representative Gerard. Yeah. Okay, open a work session on Senate Bill 243A.
Chair Olson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 243A comes to you from the Parole Board. This is a bill that would modify the conditions of post-prison supervision and parole for individuals convicted of sex crimes. The current law contains a prohibition against frequenting without prior written approval any place where persons under 18 years of age regularly congregate. There was a Court of Appeals case in 2004 that ruled the word frequenting within that prohibition means often, which created a situation where the parole board felt that it would not be in a position to violate convicted sex offenders unless it had proof of the offenders returning over and over again to the place where individuals under 18 regularly congregate. This measure would replace that prohibition with a two-tiered system. It would impose first a wholesale prohibition on persons convicted of sex crimes from being present at or near the grounds of a school, child care center, playground, or other place intended for use primarily by children without prior written approval. And then further, it would create a condition of supervision on the same individuals from being present more than one time at a place where people under 18 regularly congregate, again, without prior written approval. No amendments before you.
Okay, is there any discussion or objection to the bill?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Ms. Greer.
What is the legal definition of near?
Chair Olson, Representative Greer, could you repeat the question, sir?
What is the legal definition of near?
Near?
Near.
Near, I'm sorry.
It's in the bill.
What's near?
There is no, Representative Chair Olson, Representative Garrard, there is no verbiage in the statute that currently defines that term. So if it were being reviewed by a court, they would look to Webster's, and I'd be happy to go grab that definition for you. I think my hunch is that the definition is something to the effect of in close proximity. And I might add, what I think that is getting at is, but has to do with the Brundage case itself, which is the Court of Appeals case that was the impetus for this measure. And in that case, the convicted sex offender was across the street from a school playground, videotaping children playing in the playground of the school. I think that my statement obviously isn't going to be worth anything, but for purposes of legislative history, but I would respectfully suggest that might be the typical situation or scenario where an individual might not be at the school, on the actual premises in the building of the school, or even on the property above the school, however, across the street from the school, leering at children in a way that makes them accessible to that individual, where the conditions of probation might be designed to prevent such a situation.
Okay. Could I have a follow, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Gerard.
Thank you. So we leave it up to the discretion of the enforcement officer to consider what near is.
Chair Olson, Representative Gerard, I think that's probably an accurate statement. I think for practical purposes, the way this would play out is if a supervising officer had evidence that a person convicted of a sex offense was in close proximity to one of these places, that they would initiate a revocation proceeding, and that would go before a judge or an administrative official. And if there were not an admission to the violation, that a judge would determine whether or not there was sufficient proof of near. And then if that were appealed, I think that would be the posture in which the Court of Appeals would decide what the definition of the term is. Another approach would be that this body could put into this measure what you think is the appropriate definition of near.
Thank you.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes, so Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Gerard has raised an interesting point and has scooped both of the lawyers on this committee, because I want to recast the issue just slightly. Because if near is overbroad without definition, I believe it's subject to constitutional attack. And I think that we may be in that difficulty in this bill. Counsel, what would you think about that?
Chair Olson, Representative Ackerman, your question to me is what my opinion is about whether or not the word near as used in the statute might be overbroad.
Correct.
I might offer a perspective, although I certainly am not a criminal law expert by any stretch, but this is not identifying a crime as we had, for example, on a bill that came out of this committee and was passed on the floor of the House recently. Instead, what we're dealing with is the statutory authority of a parole or probation officer to revoke conditions for the controlling the conduct of a person who's under probation or parole. And this is somebody who is under sentence of the criminal justice system. So they could be serving their time inside an institution. Instead, they're on parole or probation, so they're under supervision outside of the institution. And it would seem to me that you would have more latitude in defining the conditions for that release under those circumstances than you would when you're defining a crime. I'm just offering that up. Counsel, does that make sense?
Charleston, Representative McPherson, I do. I think there's a lot of truth to your comment, and in I appreciate the few extra seconds to think about Representative Ackerman's good question about overbreadth. And as I think about it, I think that the potential challenge, and I think there could be a potential challenge, and indeed this measure was amended on the Senate side out of some of the members' concerns that the original measure might be too vague. And as I thought through that process, my thought is that the word near, if it is subject to any challenge, would potentially be a vagueness challenge. How close is near? That is possible, but I also point out that the word frequenting, which we are deleting, potentially the assembly is deleting in the current statute, is probably just as clear or unclear as the word near, and that term was not challenged for vagueness and had not been held to be a vague term, and the court in the Brundridge case cracked open the Webster's dictionary and took the plain meaning and went with that.
Did you have something further, Representative Grelli?
I wanted to ask Representative McPherson. Under your scenario, to me, it is leaving the definition now of near up to what could be multiple personnel. In other words, several people in making the decision as to whether a particular individual violated this law, the interpretation of near is now being done by more than one person.
Well, I think there are multiple players. The key player is the parole or probation officer who's setting conditions for release or for supervisory conditions under which the person under their supervision doesn't have to be inside an institution. What this statute does, I think, is that it limits the exercise of discretion by the parole officers to what conditions can be set, and that condition that would say you can't be within 3 miles of a school, for example, would not be a permissible condition to set, but a condition that says you can't be near a school would be, and that and then that as a limiting factor on the conditions set by the parole or probation officer could be challenged in court, and apparently was based on the word frequenting in the Brundridge case. And it could be challenged again as to the meaning of near, but as counsel pointed out, it wasn't challenged on the basis of vagueness. It was challenged on that you hadn't been actually in violation of that standard. The reason I supported the bill in the subcommittee and volunteered to carry the bill is that it does seem to me that that when people whose alternative is they could be in prison and who have been assigned an alternative, which is probation or parole, that giving somewhat more latitude to their supervisory authority seems like a reasonable policy choice.
Further?
Yeah, further. So the intent of the bill is not to apprehend someone that's near a school. It's simply to write it down on a line on a form and hand it to that person and say, you're no longer allowed to be near a school.
Well, yes, subject to the sanction that if they violate that standard, then they are put into the institution because they're in violation of their parole or probationary supervision.
Go ahead.
But again, don't they have to be apprehended or seen?
Right.
In order to violate the parole, they've got to be sighted near in violation of the parole.
Yes, somebody
which brings
would have to
up the multiple interpretations of near.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Joe.
Chair Olson, Representative Grelli, to follow up on the question, the point you're raising. The big picture here, the statute, the scheme that this measure looks to amend is the conditions of supervision on individuals who have been convicted of sex offenses, either individuals who are placed on probation, individuals who are released on parole, which would be from an older sentence, a pre-sentencing guideline sentence, or individuals who are released from prison on post-prison supervision. And the other conditions that are contained in this statute are prohibition against contacting persons under 18, prohibition against working or volunteering at any school or daycare center or playground or other place where persons under 18 regularly congregate. In addition to prohibitions, there are active affirmative acts that a person must do, such as to complete and successfully discharge from sex offender treatment programs. I would submit to you that in the context of these other things, what I think that this prohibition about frequenting or being present at or near is intended to do is prevent access between or from the person who is being supervised to children. So I think it's within that context that a court would look at what the definition of near is. When we're talking about miles away, where the further away you get, the more access becomes attenuated. I think there's got to be some kind of connection to the opportunity for access when we're talking about near.
If you were a sex offender, I'd sure want to know how close I could come before I violated parole, and I don't think this tells you that. So, but it's not worth all the debate we've had on it, probably.
Okay, Representative Worth, yourself.
Well, just to add to the confusion, I'm wondering, I'm just concerned about the potential interpretation of other place intended for use primarily by persons under 18 years of age. And I'm thinking, would this include a library, a park without a playground, or is it, and would places like a swimming pool or the beach be exempted so you can take photos of the children at a beach, but because it's not intended for congregation by 18-year-olds?
Okay, before you answer, Representative Barker.
I think the parole officer needs to have a little discretion. If we say you can only be 30 feet from a school, there's going to be all kinds of instances where that won't work. A parole officer tells somebody you can't be near the school, and by that you better not be within 500 feet or a block or whatever. And the things you mentioned, the swimming pool, you know, we just had a case up in Portland where some, I have to say it nice, a sexual predator was down trying to groom these little 8-year-old boys, swimming with them and showering and saying, come on boys, take off your towels, we're men and all that. That's the kind of people that this guy could say, you're not going near that swimming pool. And that means don't go park in the parking lot, and they can lay it out for them. If I'm a parolee and I have a question, I'm going to ask, what does that mean?
What about like at the beach, though?
Well, it would depend. If a lot of kids are at the beach, you'd probably tell them to stay away from the beach. He's out on the street instead of being in prison, so he's still under supervision. I just don't think you can define it to the inches and feet, or it would be too... It just wouldn't work. It wouldn't be workable because there's going to be some cases when somebody may need to be near a park for some other reason, a job or something, and they can adjust it. But I think in the context of this and the fact that it's not saying just anybody, it's somebody on parole under supervision, the supervisor is telling them what they can and can't do, I think this is a good bill.
I don't want to add to the complexity here, Mr. Chair, but one of the key points in my mind when this was before the subcommittee was the discretion that the probation officer would have, the person providing the post-prison supervision. And I remember asking a witness whether there was discretion to decide whether these restrictions would apply, and being told there was. And yet, as I read the statute now, I'm not, without having this discussion kind of drawing me to focus in more fully, I'm not sure I see that discretion. When I look at page 2, lines 9 through 11, if the person is on post-prison supervision following conviction of a sex crime, as defined in certain places, the board or supervisory authority shall include all of the following as special conditions. So I would, you know, this has caused me to focus in a little bit more fully, and so I'm wondering maybe if this bill is not ready for us to move today, considering the range of discussions we've had.
Representative Ackerman.
Well, I just wanted to add a point. I don't think that the Constitution bends based upon whether we're defining a crime or an ambiguous or overbroad term in defining a crime or defining a condition of probation. It seems to me the same constitutional standard would apply. Each would lead the potential the defendant into a sanction, either having been found guilty or having been found in violation of probation, each of which would be subject to sanction. So I also agree that perhaps this bill should not go forward until we can either get some advice on this or define what near is in terms of objective, you know, feet and inches, whatever it takes. And that happens frequently in how we have to, when we have to objectify something. And I note that the word frequency, which seems rather vague to me, was stricken out and was redefined in the bold-faced in the bill as being present more than one time. So there was a intent, at least some legislative intent here, to objectify what frequenting meant. I think we have the same responsibility to define what near means.
Mr. Chair, I move that we refer this bill back to the criminal subcommittee for further work.
Okay, we'll close work session on that, on this bill then, and do that.
We don't have to vote on that, or is that automatic?
I think. Do we need?
I think you can either ask unanimous consent.
Okay.
If you don't get unanimous consent, you can vote on it. I think the majority gets it back.
Okay. Reopen a work session on Senate Bill 243A.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a quick question of subcommittee members? I guess I'm wondering why it's okay to be in these places at one time but not twice. The frequenting, why isn't it, I mean, you can be there once but not more than once.
Chair, I think there's a motion.
Was there just
well, we do. We had a motion, but actually it was, there was a, the gavel came down, and it came down again. So I think we're back in work session on Senate Bill 243, and I don't think we have a motion before us right at the moment, because I would have to remake it, I think. But I think that's a helpful comment, because we need sort of guidance from our colleagues from the civil subcommittee so that we can know how to act when we consider this further in the criminal sub. So if we could just take that idea back to and you could maybe have discussion with us outside the committee about further concerns, we could factor those into our deliberations.
Great.
So what I would move then with unanimous consent of the committee, Mr. Chair, is that we move Senate Bill 243 back to the criminal subcommittee for further consideration of this bill.
Okay. Representative McPherson moves with unanimous consent to return Senate Bill 243 to the criminal subcommittee. Is there an objection?
Well, I kind of have an objection to this because it's kind of late. This is a good bill. It has minor things that maybe need to be changed. Let's send it over. It needs to go back to the Senate anyway because we've amended it over here, if it's my understanding. So we might be able to get an amendment done over there, at least get it on its way.
Although it would have to go to conference for that to happen when it's passed.
Oh.
If we make a non-concurring amendment. Let's see here.
Okay, it's obvious we don't have unanimous consent, so is there...
mistake, sorry.
Okay.
Wrong bill.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move that the, Senate Bill 243A be referred back to the Criminal Law Subcommittee.
Okay.
I think my point is that Representative McPherson's motion required unanimous consent. Mine does not.
Okay. Representative Ackerman
has made the motion to return Senate Bill 243A to the Criminal Subcommittee. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative
Flores? Aye.
Representative
Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chairman
Person? Aye. With that, Senate Bill 243A will be returned back to the Criminal Subcommittee. That closes that work session. Open work session, Senate Bill 262A.
Chair Olson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 262A comes to you from the Oregon Health and Sciences University. This would extend the sunset for an exemption to the public records statute for records that identify persons engaged in research on animals at OHSU. The current law that contains this exemption will sunset in January 2006. This will extend that sunset to January 2010. No amendments.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ackerman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the Senate Bill 262A be forwarded to the House with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman moves Senate Bill 262A to the House for with a do-pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I gave this a courtesy vote in the sub, and since that point I have had some discussions with the OHSU folks, and my reservations have been removed, so I will support the bill.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussions? Seeing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Person?
Aye.
Chair Krieger excused, Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 262A, having passed with a due pass recommendation, moves to the floor. Work session is closed on that one. We'll open a work session on 641. Let's see. Carrier on that is Mr. Representative Ackerman.
Thank you.
Okay. Open a work session then on Senate Bill 641A.
Chair Olson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 641A is sponsored by Senator Ryan Deckert. This bill would create the misdemeanor crime of owning or possessing dogfighting paraphernalia with the intent that that paraphernalia be used in furtherance of a dogfight or to train a dog as a fighting dog. There are no amendments before you.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 641A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thatcher moves Senate Bill 641A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Person?
Aye.
Chair Krieger excused, Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 641A, having passed with due pass recommendation, moves to the floor, and work session is closed on that. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1045.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1045 to the floor with a due pass. I'm sorry, Mr. O'Leary wants to explain.
Feed me to it. Chair Krieger, Chair Olson, sorry, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1045 would extend the sunset on the statute that allows an agreement between the district courts, the circuit courts in Jefferson and Crook counties with the Warm Springs tribe, allowing the counties to transfer juveniles in their juvenile delinquency court to the Warm Springs tribe for adjudication or disposition. The current statute is set to expire January 2, 2006. This would extend the sunset to January
2, 2010. Okay, thank you. Representative Barker, you represent?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this bill merely extends a sunset, and I wondered if the mover of the motion would consider the consent calendar.
Yes. If there's no objections.
Is there any objections? Just consent. Okay. Representative Barker moves Senate Bill 1045 to the consent calendar. with the due pass, or with, yeah, to the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Okay, hearing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrara?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Wirt?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger excused. Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 1045 passes and moves to the consent calendar. Work session is closed. Yeah. Representative Thatcher, you're carrying 641, Senate Bill 641A.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you just move it to the consent calendar?
On the consent calendar.
No.
That was another one I was referring to.
You're right. It's one before.
Okay. Okay, open a work session on Senate Bill 229A.
Chair Olson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 229A comes to you from the Oregon Law Commission. This bill requires a court in a dependency proceeding to give preference to the placement of a child to the person with a caregiver relationship with the child. This bill also clarifies the definition of caregiver relationship for placement as well as intervener status, and sets forth the process for substitution of appointed counsel and termination of parental rights cases that allows the court to only substitute appointed counsel for a party pursuant to the rules adopted by the Public Defense Service Commission concerning appointed counsel. This bill was carried by Representative Ackerman out of the Civil Subcommittee. It comes out without amendments. This bill would probably be a good candidate for the consent calendar as well.
Representative Garrard.
I relinquish to Representative Ackerman.
Representative Ackerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move that Senate Bill 229A be forwarded to the House with a due pass recommendation with consideration for the consent calendar.
Okay, Representative Ackerman moves Senate Bill 229A with a due pass recommendation to the floor with to the consent calendar. Is there any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrara?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Wirt?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
If you're excused, Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 229A has passed and will be moved on the consent calendar. Okay. Work session is closed on that. Open a work session on Senate Bill 290A.
920.
What did I say?
290.
920A.
Correct. Chair Olson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 920A comes to you also from the Oregon Law Commission. This bill revises Oregon's laws relating to execution sales. Specifically, for example, it describes what a writ of execution may direct a sheriff to do and sets out rules regarding issuance and return of writ, among other things. There was an amendment adopted in the Civil Subcommittee, -A4. That amendment makes technical changes to clarify provisions relating to bids by judgment creditors, the manner of payment, and payment of the redemption amount. Specifically, for instance, it provides that the sheriff may not accept a teller's check as a matter of payment. Just to note, these Oregon execution statutes and redemption laws are over 100 years old, and this bill represents the first time that they've been comprehensively overhauled.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Ackerman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll move that Senate Bill 920A be forwarded to the House with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman moves that Senate Bill 920A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? As amended.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrara?
Aye.
Senator Thatcher?
Aye.
Senator
Wirth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Chair
Krieger
excused. Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 920A passes with a due pass recommendation. We'll close that work session. Open a work session. Let's see. Representative Ackerman, you're carrying that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Open a work session on House Bill 2285.
Chair Olson, members of the committee, House Bill 2285 comes to you from the Administrative Law Section of the Oregon State Bar. This bill comes to you from the Civil Subcommittee, where it adopted the Dash 6 amendments. Those amendments replace the entire measure. Specifically, those amendments require that health professional regulatory boards disclose information obtained by the boards in investigation and disciplinary actions. It accepts certain information, specifically information that is privileged or confidential under other laws, and it provides also that licensing boards may withhold information if the information would permit the identification of any person who either made a complaint to the board about the licensee or provided information that led to the filing of a notice, and if that person will not be testifying at the hearing. It also allows boards to withhold reports of expert witnesses. And it also sets out, or it provides that a licensee may only disclose information received from the boards to the extent necessary to prepare for the hearing. That requirement is to ensure that information that is disclosed that the licensee has is not disseminated further than necessary.
Is there a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move that House Bill 2285 be forwarded to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman moves that House Bill 2285, as amended, to the floor with the do-pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, if I just may, for just in a way of discussion, I've really thought about this quite a bit because I've been, as my good friend Representative Kitts calls me, a union goon for over 20 years and represented people on that side of the fence. Also was an internal affairs investigator, which kind of flops sides there. I had a call yesterday from a friend of mine, a longtime homicide detective, who now works for the Board of Medical Examiners. And he said if we pass this bill, it would be devastating to them because they get a lot of doctors will report other doctors who are in violation or making some kind of an error. And they can protect their identity. If they just have to redact a name, it would be very easy for the person who's being complained about to figure out where that's coming from. And he believes that would really impede their investigations. And I'm going to be a no vote on the bill for that reason.
Okay.
I believe the purpose of the amendment is to go beyond just the mere redacting of a name and allowing the text to be read by the licensee. The exemption reads information that would permit the identification of any person who provided information that led to the filing of the notice and would not provide testimony. I think the key words are information that would permit the identification would not only require the redacting of the name, but perhaps the forwarding the text of that paragraph or page or whatever it is to the licensee. And I do think we made an effort to do that, and if I recall, this was Representative McPherson's idea or suggestion.
Certainly, there's been a lot of debate over this, just this issue, and the language that's in the Dash 6 amendments it's been an effort to try to come up with language that would assure the protection of the identity of people who are complainants and those who provide information. So it's been amended in response to that. I can understand that there is a continuing sensitivity about it, and I appreciate that, but I think we've tried to strike the right balance.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Okay. The motion has been made then by Representative Ackerman that House Bill 2285 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
And just for point of clarification, Mr. Chair, and the Dash 6 amendments are in the bill now?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
No.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Sackett?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Here for your excuse, Chair Olson?
Aye. Bill 2285 passes with due pass recommendation. We'll close that work session. And that ends our business.
Representative
Carrier,
I'm not.
Yes, I'm Representative Carrier. Okay, thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Committee is adjourned.